Springer got it. Toronto loud early. The 2-1 pitch. That is crushed. Deep left center field. Back goes Mullins at the wall, and it is gone! It's gone! Grand slam, George Springer!
The Blue Jays did what they had to do this afternoon. They pick up the win.
Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters, presented by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Today is Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. My name's Arden Zwelling. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Ben, the Blue Jays season is over. They have finished at 91-71. They had a plus 183 run differential. Finished the season on an absolute tear, 25-10 over their final 35 games, and they end up fourth place in the American League East, one game back of a playoff spot. Your big picture, high level takeaways and feelings after the Blue Jays season that was.
I mean, what a season. What a season. I think, you know, when you look at 91 wins in fourth place, that's probably the best fourth place team I've ever seen in my life. Like, it literally in my lifetime, there has never been a fourth place 90 win team. That has not happened in the entire time that I've been alive. So, you know, that in itself stands out. And this team was really good. I think they were even better than the 91 wins might reflect. And of course, there's no prize for being the best fourth place team in the last, you know, 35
years.
Well, right, there was last year. This year, there is no such prize. And so they're on the outside looking in. It's remarkable. I mean, I think they could have done some real damage. And if we're watching Cesar Hernandez and Lourdes Garcia go up against Nick Pivetta in the ALCS in a couple weeks, like, you can't tell me that the Toronto Blue Jays couldn't have done some real damage in the playoffs. And so, you know, at the same time, they did their part. And they finished so strong, as you said, with that 25-10, sweeping the Orioles in the end of the season. It was a really different end to a season. You know, we were there covering it at Rogers Center. I think it'll prove to be memorable. I think it was definitely different than any ending to any season. It was different all season long compared to any season that I've covered or followed. And yet here they are, a very good team that's now watching the playoffs just like us.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how this team is remembered 4, 5, 6 years from now, right? Like, thinking about how we now reflect on the 15 and 16 teams and how we think about them in the context of what happened after. What happens after with this team, I think, will really color how we look back on this team, whether it is just the beginning of a long, extended, sustainable run of contention, or whether things go really poorly next season for one reason or another, health, poor outcomes, whatever. Somehow the teams that you're competing against are even better than they were this year, and you lose in even more heartbreaking fashion. And all of a sudden it's, wow, did you miss a massive opportunity? Like, it really is going to be colored by what happens next. So, like, sitting here today, like, it's very difficult to sort of surmise like what that's going to look like. But when I think about this team, like, it's tough to square sometimes, right? When you think about how good the Blue Jays were for all the reasons that you said, like, probably the best team in baseball over the last 6 weeks, maybe since the trade deadline, when Jose Berríos showed up, a team that nobody wanted to play in the postseason, a team that the New York Yankees quite literally did not want to play, made a choice in a four-way tie scenario to go to Fenway and play the Red Sox instead of playing the Blue Jays, an undeniably great team, but a team that undeniably missed a massive opportunity as well. Like, I'm not sure those things are mutually exclusive. Like, the Blue Jays should have done better. It just makes it very conflicting when those two things are both simultaneously true.
Oh yeah, they definitely are. I mean, this is a great team. They had so many great stories too. And I think that, you know, ultimately I look at this as a successful season for the Blue Jays, even though they didn't make the playoffs. Like, to have Vlad Jr. break out the way he did, to have Robbie Ray probably have a Cy Young season, Bo Bichette have an incredible, incredible season, Teoscar, Alek Manoah breaks out and has, you know, the season that he did, overcoming the adversity as far as home stadiums and locations. I think there's so many successes. And as you say, it's still disappointing, and you only get so many shots. And we talk about this team as though they're young and on the rise, and that's true. They are. And so logically, they should have a number of shots ahead in the years to come. And yet it doesn't mean that each edition of the Blue Jays is going to be as good as this one. This edition of the Blue Jays with Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray doing the things that they did and a fully healthy young core, this is a great team. Like, the only team in the American League that I'm truly confident in saying is better than the Blue Jays this year is the Rays. I think the Rays are better. We can say that with their pitching depth and their run prevention, plus an offense that, you know, was great. So the Rays are better. But beyond that, I just don't know that you can confidently say any other team is. So as the Blue Jays proceed and try to build on this, it's not just snap your fingers and, you know, bring back these guys and have the same outcome. Or you might not be able to bring back these guys, which we'll get to. Like, it's not just something you can take for granted. And I just look at Kyle Schwarber now on the Red Sox as this, like, veteran player, this grizzled veteran. And like 5-6 years ago, he was one of those up and coming Cubs players that was supposed to be part of a Cubs core that would last for a long, long time.
That's a great point. Think about what happened with the Cubs. Like, think about what people thought about the Cubs, like, right when they got good, and what people thought the Cubs, like, people were already predicting dynasties with them. Yeah. Look what happened there and how quick that window of contention closed. Like, that's why it's like, it is so much about what happens next, how we reflect on this team, because this team is both, like, quite obviously the start of something with players like Vlad, Bo, Alec Manoah, the core, Nate Pearson, you can throw him in here. Like, this is the start of something. It's also very possibly the end of something with Robbie Ray, Marcus Semien, two players who are absolutely elemental to this team's success. In an open market environment, like, good luck bringing both those guys back for the salaries that they're going to deserve, not just command, but deserve. You know, it's like hitting huge on Ray and Semien with the free agent deals that the Blue Jays did last winter is going to be next to impossible to replicate going forward.
It was unprecedented in the history of the Blue Jays. Like, yeah, you know, I guess you could point to, you know, Dave Winfield and Jack Morris. Okay, so there's a pretty good precedent, but you have to go back 30 years. It's extremely rare. And even then, Winfield and Morris, like, they were veterans. They didn't have the seasons that Semien and Ray did. Like, these guys performed at an elite level. And that's a credit to the front office for identifying and recruiting these guys. But even, you know, you could put the best GM in baseball out there, you're not going to have that kind of success year after year. It's just, you can't sustain that.
Like, is it unreasonable to say that those are, like, 98th, 99th percentile outcomes?
No, that's accurate.
What they got.
I mean, accurate.
That, right? Try to replicate that. It's going to be next to impossible to pull that off again. And if those players do come back and that production doesn't come back, like, that has to be replaced somewhere, assuming that the teams that you're competing against are going to continue to be good. And you would think that there is, as crazy as it is to think, you would think that there is another step for Vlad and Bo, players who were that good this year. You think they probably can continue to get a little bit better. They're already among some of the better hitters in the game, but they're still in the early 20s. So you think there's another step there. You think that a full year of Alec Manoah, where he isn't just, like, you want to talk about incredible outcomes, by the way, Alec Manoah as that, like, routinely every year at the beginning of the season, there is the minor leaguer who everybody's clamoring to bring up, right? Bring him up. Let's get him to the majors. Quit manipulating his service time, you jackals. And usually that guy arrives eventually, well after, you know, everybody's clamoring for him to be up, and he struggles because there's an adjustment period, because it's a new level and it's hard to compete against the best players in the world. No, not Alec Manoah. Alec Manoah just arrived as this fully formed frontline starter, over 110 innings, whatever he did. Like, if he had a full season, I mean, he is up there with some of the better starters in the big leagues. What an incredible outcome. So you would think a full season of him, like, that's going to help a little bit. You would think that, you know, if Gabe Moreno gets to the big leagues next year, and, like, that'll be the guy next year who everyone is clamoring for to come up, and we'll see. I imagine he'll debut next year if his career continues on the track that it's on. Maybe he can come up and, you know, bring some of that production and replace it. But, like, it's going to have to come from somewhere. So, like, there is a very real possibility. Like I said, we don't know until things play out. We don't know until the next 3, 4, 5 years. It's a very real possibility that this is, like, the best Blue Jays team of the decade, and we just don't know it yet. And they didn't make the postseason with that team.
It's remarkable. And we can say definitively, like, this is a team that could have accomplished more than they did. They could have. They had that ability. They had that talent and even the health, right, to arrive at the end of the season in a relatively healthy state. They had Barrios lined up for 163. They had Ray lined up for the wild card game. Like, they were poised to go. It's not like they arrived at the finish line in shambles. They were playing well. They had their starting pitching lined up exactly the way they would want to. So they were in good shape. We're not just creating, you know, fan fiction here when we talk about this possibility that was in front of the Blue Jays. And so that's a fact. They missed out on an opportunity. Now, if in the next few years they surround this core, which is a great, great core and the envy of a lot of teams in baseball, if they can surround that core with some other veterans and other players to win and maybe win a World Series or reach the World Series or win three straight division titles, then that will certainly impact the way we view 2021. But, you know, it's also possible that things don't turn out the way that they're hoping because, again, the American League East is an incredibly tough place to play. And even though the Blue Jays are a very good team on the rise, positioned well on a number of fronts, the Yankees and Rays and Red Sox aren't going anywhere.
There's just so many amazing things that happen for this team that we don't even like talk about because there's so many of them. It's just like the shotgun blast where you can't possibly like pick each of them out. Jordan Romano led the American League in wins probability added.
Right.
Bo Bichette led the American League in hits. Think about like the alternate timelines where the Blue Jays sign a DJ LeMahieu or they sign a Michael Brantley and then maybe they don't do a Semien or they don't do a Springer. Like, Springer in half a season had as good of a year as LeMahieu and Brantley did in nearly full ones. The Blue Jays run differential is 1.5 that of the Red Sox and Yankees run differential combined. I mean, there's so many incredible things happen. This one like blew my mind that we didn't talk about all year. The Blue Jays finished with the second lowest strikeout rate in MLB.
Remarkable. That right. One really got me. Yeah. Because, crazy. You know, in today's game, even the teams that strike out a very small amount, they still strike out a lot, you know, relative to, you know, teams of 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So it's not like the Blue Jays never strike out, but it's really worth noting that this is a team that relative to the rest of Major League Baseball does not strike out. So that's, again, that's another way that this team is impressive. And I think the team that finished the season is just way more impressive, way stronger than the team that started the season, you know, where they had your Roarks and your Malones and your Josh Palacios up trying to fill in gaps in the outfield. So again, to the point of they were poised to do some good things, 91 wins doesn't reflect the talent. Like, I think the talent, again, like I don't think there are that many teams in baseball that are clearly better than the Toronto Blue Jays. And yet the goal is to advance and they didn't advance. So I'm not trying to give them a prize for finishing fourth. But, you know, we also can't deny that this roster was incredibly strong.
The second lowest strikeout rate in MLB while leading the league with 262 home runs is insane.
Yeah.
That is crazy that those two things simultaneously had to have an approach at collectively as a team where you were hitting that many home runs and not striking out that much. Like, those two things typically do not happen. If you hit a lot of home runs, you typically strike out a lot. That's just kind of how the game works against velocity these days. Teoscar Hernandez, who you could talk about forever, Tim Mesa. I mean, just some of the stories with this team, like, we could go on. I kind of, you know, did my autopsy on the team yesterday, and the piece will be going up later today here on October 5th, basically like where it went wrong for the Blue Jays. And you pointed to a couple of them, and like, it's small stuff, right? Because when a team like this, that's like this good, misses the postseason, it's very small things that went wrong that, you know, allowed you to miss the postseason by one game. We're not talking about huge, like, foundational stuff, but I kind of found like two things that I thought really sabotaged this team. One, in April, when George Springer was out and injured, well, the problem was that Springer was out. But then, like, the second problem was that the players who received that playing time with Springer out and Teoscar Hernandez on the COVID-19 list weren't even close to replacement level. And that hurt the Blue Jays massively in April. Like, you think, like, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. was on in a massive slump in April. And then you had the Josh Palacioses and Jonathan Davises of this world. You had Kevin Biggio in the outfield. And none of those guys were providing even replacement level production. And you end up in a spot in April where the Blue Jays lose 9 games by 2 runs or less in a month that was by far their least productive, by far the club's worst offensively. Joe Panik was playing a lot. Kevin Biggio, as I said, was leading off and hitting second. Rowdy Tellez was getting a lot of plate appearances. None of those guys were even like approaching league average numbers. That really sabotaged the Blue Jays in a big way in April. That's the first one. I'll get the second one next because we got a whole bullpen diatribe to go on. But your thoughts on that?
No, I think that it's true, right? And, you know, we talk about these teams that are kind of the ideals in Major League Baseball, where you have the Rays and they're kind of like constant waves of pitching, the Dodgers who do it with pitching and position players. You know, that's where the Blue Jays want to get to. And, you know, they clearly weren't there with respect to the position player depth there at the beginning of the season. I think, too, you're about to get to the bullpen, but, you know, the same could be said with so many of the pitchers who ended up logging innings on this team. And that's, you know, look, no team has, you know, a 40 man that's absolutely stacked with players that they're thrilled with. Dodgers and Giants might be approaching that, and Rays probably are approaching that. But yeah, for the Jays, yeah, the Joe Panik at bats, not what you want to be seeing. Same goes for you know, the Tanner Roark innings and the Tommy Malone innings that went to some pitchers who really were substandard in the early part of the season.
But that's the level of depth that it takes to be one of the better teams in MLB these days, because otherwise you are vulnerable, you know, to everybody slumping at once or to losing some really big pieces to injury, you know, to COVID-19 infections this year. You're vulnerable to that. We talked about it all preseason, how important depth was going to be this year. We just didn't talk about it in kind of the right context of like the fact that like the Blue Jays' depth when called upon, they just weren't well enough insulated against things going wrong. And it clearly wasn't only the, you know, position player group in April. It was then, as you alluded to, the bullpen in May and June. It was Kirby Yates' loss for the season, Julian Merriweather going down in April, and the huge one that we didn't talk about enough, David Phelps being lost, was a massive blow to this. Well, because think about when David Phelps was pitching, right? He was pitching those kind of like 6th, 7th inning spots, kind of trying to get it to the back end guys. And when the Blue Jays offense improved in May, like when Teoscar Hernandez was back and, you know, going on his tear, Gurriel was pulling himself out of it, like Vlad and Semien were just like, you know, the surface of the sun basically for that entire stretch. As the offense got better, the bullpen began to implode. And the Blue Jays needed reinforcements in the bullpen in a really big way in May and in early June. And they didn't have them. And they didn't have the depth to sustain the hits they took in the bullpen. You know, the Blue Jays lost 12 games this season that they were leading in the 7th inning or later. 9 of them came in May and June. Like, that was when you had the Joel Piamps, you know, era. That's when he had multiple Tyler Chatwood meltdowns. I mean, you know, you had Trent Thornton and Anthony Castro in leverage. You're cycling through like the, you know, next guy off the waiver wire, like Carl Edwards Jr., Jeremy Beasley, Jacob Barnes. I mean, that's when you needed internal depth to just kind of help paper over a tough spot for the bullpen and missing some really key arms. Or you needed to maybe have a bit more urgency and maybe be a bit more aggressive. And even though it is extremely hard to make trades in May and early June, get creative, go out and find something to address a real problem.
Yeah, because, you know, once they did, Simber, Dickerson, that trade ended up being great for the Blue Jays. A great addition. But like you said, there were opportunities there in May and June where they really could have used that support, and it probably would have made the difference. And that's the thing, and that's why it's probably so agonizing for a lot of Blue Jays fans at this point in the season, because when you look back at it, any one thing that you change would impact the entire outcome of the season. Yeah. So you could look to any error, you could look to any blow and save, you could look to any missed opportunity with respect to depth or injury. I mean, George Springer, we talk about this all year, but he missed extended stretches. If he was on the field for more of the season, even 130 games, then he's probably a four-win player. And all of a sudden, boom, they're in the playoffs. So, you know, you can turn the dial on any one of those variables. You could even look at the Red Sox season if you want to go about it that way, and any little comeback win that they had or any breakout performance that they had no reason to expect. That, too, impacted the Blue Jays and the way their season ended. So, you know, it's painful to do potentially, but, you know, I think ultimately after 162, the standings are going to tell you who should be in the playoffs. And, you know, the Blue Jays can point to their run differential. They can point to this amazing team. All those things are true, but they had their chances. You know, they definitely had their chances over the course of that last couple weeks in Minnesota against the Twins, in Toronto against the Yankees. They had their chances. They had Robbie Ray lined up against the Yankees in that game. They didn't win it. And yeah, it's a tough way to go down.
I guess I kind of look at the dials that they could turn, that they could have turned, that the things that were under their control. Because there's so many things in the baseball season that you can't control the fact that there's a pandemic and you can't play in Toronto. That's, I think, what was extra torturous about the way that the season ended, is that the Blue Jays like demolished the Orioles. They did everything they needed to do that weekend, but then were still stuck watching, you know, thousands of kilometers away on the Jumbotron, like what the outcome being decided by someone else, and trying to like will a team like the Nationals that, you know, has Alcides Escobar in the two hole.
Yeah, that team doesn't look too good, having watched a lot of them over the course of this past weekend.
You're trying to will them to win for the first time in like a month on the final day of their season, when they've all got their bags packed, they're all trying to go home, they're having like, you know, send-offs for veteran players in the middle of the game.
Like, exactly. Alex Avila and Ryan Zimmerman are just having these impromptu like send-offs. It's like, yeah, I don't think the Nationals are totally into this game.
So I think that's what was like so like difficult about it, is that you just didn't have a say in the matter, right? The Blue Jays did their absolute best on the final day of the season, the final weekend of the season, but they just had, it was just completely out of their control. So I look back on the season, I'm like, what could you have controlled differently? What could you have done differently? You could have built some more depth. Like, you could have had some better outfield depth for April, and maybe you could have pulled the trigger on a bullpen deal earlier. On something more substantial to address your bullpen earlier, and not put as much faith in the internal options as you did that didn't really work out. And like, I don't know how realistic it is to be able to find like a trade that would address that in May, in early June. Like, do you think that if the Blue Jays, you know, attached a more premium prospect to Joe Panik, that the Marlins would have pulled the trigger on that deal earlier? Like, do you think that there was an avenue to do that? Because if there was, like, if that deal was out there to be made in early June, in late May, the Blue Jays make that deal and they're in the postseason.
Well, yeah, it's entirely possible, right? Because Simber was really good, and so was Dickerson, although he ended up coming in later. Like, I don't know that in late May, that's probably pushing it, because, you know, at that point, you're kind of still getting into the rhythm of the season. It sends quite a message to your fans. But do you have the date in front of you when they made that trade? I don't have it offhand.
I believe it was late June. I could look it up, but I'm pretty sure it was late June, and Richards was early July.
Yeah, right. That sounds right. So let's say they made the Simber trade late June. Well, you know, they probably could have made it on June 15th if they had attached a better prospect.
June 29th.
June 29th. So yeah. Could they have attached, I'm not sure, Kevin Smith, and made that trade on June 15th? Yeah, they probably could have. And would that at the time have seemed like a very steep price to pay? Yep.
And maybe lose the trade and maybe you don't lose the season.
Right. You know, at the same time, you look at the trades they made, and they certainly were aggressive when it came to improving this team. And the Simber trade ended up being a really good move. They also tried on Soria, didn't work. Tried on Brad Hand, really, really didn't work. But then you look at the Brios trade, and like, I think at that time, you could have imagined things going in a couple different directions. And, you know, we were even getting questions like, are the Blue Jays going to sell at that point in time? And as the end of the season was unfolding, I started thinking, like, this is why you go for it in those situations. It doesn't mean you trade your top prospects every year for pitching, because you can't do that. It's not sustainable. But this is why you try to augment your team, because Berríos ended up helping a tremendous amount. The Blue Jays were a better team because of him, and it ended up being a really memorable finish and a really good team that ultimately won't be playing in October, beyond, of course, that first weekend, but they were a very good team, and Berríos will help them next year.
And the Berríos trade is a perfect example of kind of the urgency that I think that like teams with designs on contending need to have. And I think that they need to expand the parameters where they don't only have that urgency in the final week of July. Like you might need to have that urgency in May and in June. Like you might need to address, you know, problems more quickly rather than like I understand, like you want more information and you want to wait and you want to see what happens. You want to let things play out. Blue Jays kind of let things play out at that point in the season. They missed the playoffs by a game. They wouldn't have missed the playoffs by a game if they hadn't acquired Jose Berríos. They would have missed it by several games,
yep.
Right? Like that shows like, right. The impact the moves like that can have. Like the Jose Berríos is a great use of urgency, that trade at the deadline. Because you could have made a perfect case. And I bet you if you dug up this podcast from that point in time, the case was probably made that the Blue Jays should just like not do anything major, right? Just look for little opportunities to not give up too much of the future, make the team a little bit better, address some needs. You know, is this team in a good enough position? Is it good enough going forward to make like a substantial move and to really give it a boost? Well, yeah, the Blue Jays went out and did that. And it almost got them into the postseason. Jose Berríos was an absolute stud down the line. So like if anything, that just shows you how important urgency is. And I do wonder if the Blue Jays had shown a bit more urgency earlier in the year, if we'd be having a different conversation right now.
It's entirely possible. I want to add one more thing before we start looking ahead here to what's next for the Jays. But as you were rattling off some of those reliever names, I was just reminded of the fact that in 2019, Charlie Montoyo talked about Sam Gavilio as being the team's MVP. And, you know, I'm just thinking, as we talk about this 2021 team, how many good players they had. And if Sam Gavilio was on this team, how far down the list he would be among players who deserve consideration for that. So that's a 2-year period of time. And a lot has changed for the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's changing certainly for the better. It was a really interesting year to follow. And this team ended up being really good.
Was that the 95 loss year?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. So here you are with 91 wins. Like as a Blue Jays fan, like it's disappointing, right? Like it stings, like it's bitter the way that it ended. Like there are so many things to feel good about with this franchise. Like it's in a terrific place. Like today, going forward, all the arrows are pointing in the right direction. Like, and you've basically come out of a rebuild that I don't know that a lot of like fans realized the rebuild was happening. Like it was like that. It's like, bang. And now here you are with Vlad, with Bo, with Alek Manoah, with, you know, we'll see what Nate Pearson's going to be, but, and with more coming, like it's, you know, there's a lot of teams that have to lose 90, 100 times year after year after year to get to this point. The Blue Jays have gotten there very good. So I think there's a lot of things to feel really good about as a Blue Jays fan, but just the, you know, considering the context of this season, I also cannot fault anybody who's like, man, that sucks. We should have done a lot better than we did.
100%. And yeah, when you're watching, you know, some of these playoff teams and looking at some of the, you know, bottom fives in their lineup.
Them.
Yeah. Especially you got a team in the Toronto Blue Jays that has Teoscar Hernandez hitting fifth, you know, like it's, yeah, they're a very good team. And I think we will remember this team for a long time.
No doubt about that. Let's step away. But when we come back, we will look ahead at what's next and what's to come for the Blue Jays when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters, Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, and it is time now for Keeping It Light, presented by Miller Lite. Ben, it's always important to remember that sports are entertainment at the end of the day, just like a movie, television show, a good book, and all those things have character arcs. And sports has character arcs too. It's just real life and real people and real human beings. But, you know, if you can kind of look at the Blue Jays as a movie or as a narrative, what was your favorite character arc for one of the protagonists with the Toronto Blue Jays this year?
You know, I'm not going to overcomplicate this one. I'm just going to go with Vlad Jr. because
everyone
knows
where you're going.
Yeah, you look at where he started this season, right? Or, you know, if you even trace it back to the end of last season and where he was then as someone who had a lot of conditioning work ahead of him and who had at that point not yet succeeded in the way that he seemed destined to against major league pitching. So fallen short of expectations 2 years into his major league career. And then he undergoes this physical transformation, shows up at spring training looking like a different guy, but we still didn't know. He had to prove it. And then he goes out there and has the season that he had. And it wasn't just the numbers. I mean, of course, 48 home runs, incredible. He's going to finish second in all likelihood to Shohei Ohtani in MVP voting in a year that, you know, really he could easily have won the award. But it's also the fact that he played 161 games, held up physically, was strong the entire season, skipped the home run derby for his team to make sure that he was strong all season, had that payoff, became a better defensive first baseman. You know, we talk about it all the time. So in a sense, we've gotten so used to this new version of Vlad Jr., but it was part of this season that he was, you know, still facing that uncertainty, and he really overcame that and put himself in an amazing position to have an MVP type season. Like, I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked.
Now, we didn't talk about his durability enough. There's like a friggin' novel of we didn't talk about enough with this team, which is kind of funny for how often we talk about them on various platforms. But it's one thing to lead the American League in WAR at the age of 22 and hit 48 bombs, but 161 games, man. Like, the only thing that could have been more impressive would have been if he played all 162 as like a guy in his early 30s up the middle and still hit 45 bombs and had a completely comparable WAR and finished actually second in AL WAR to Vlad. Like, that would have been the only thing more impressive.
Yeah, Marcus Semien had a great year too. There is no question. Is that your answer for this one?
Dude, you want to talk about a character arc with Marcus Semien, right? And you like, you know, what I just said, right? Like, 31 years old, premium up the middle defense, massive season offensively, led MLB in games and plate appearances. He missed 11 innings all season. It's wild. Finished second in the AL in WAR. That's more than, you know, pick your guy, Carlos Correa, Jose Ramirez, finished second only to Vladdy in WAR. But then so we're thinking about character arcs right now, right? So, like, think about where Marcus Semien was a year ago when he had, I mean, the gall to have two cold months while playing through an oblique issue, right? And for everybody to question him, oh, 2019 wasn't real. This is a guy, like, you take out those, like, that time when he was playing hurt in 2020, you take that out. This guy has played an MVP caliber level for three straight years. You just take out that shortened, weird season when he was hurt. And oh, by the way, in the 2020 playoffs for Oakland, he went 8-for-15. Like, remember, he was on a massive tear on that playoff run. But I mean, you know, worst timing in the world for him to be that cold entering free agency, right? And he enters free agency, all the questions around him. He isn't qualified by Oakland, like his hometown team, by the way, like playing at like the Coliseum, which is literally 15 minutes from where he grew up, like where he spent his entire life through his youth, through school at Berkeley, and then obviously a little stage with the White Sox, but then was like the heart and soul of that Oakland team for so long. Didn't get a qualifying offer. They like insulted him with this low ball offer with deferred money. And then all of a sudden, like, the smart teams started circling, right? Like, the Dodgers were in on him, the Giants, Twins. The Blue Jays, the Twins, right? The Reds were in, like, all smart teams who were like, ooh, we see value. Like, we see a guy, we see an MVP finalist from 2019 who we can get on the cheap. So Marcus Semien says, like, okay, if you guys aren't going to pay me, I will take the best of these, like, prove it, bet on yourself deals. 1 year, $18 million with the Blue Jays, and like have the biggest prove it, bet on yourself season that we've ever seen. Incredible year for Marcus Semien. If Vladimir Guerrero Jr. misses a month due to a knee injury, Marcus Semien is the guy who you're talking about as like runner-up MVP to Shohei Ohtani. And oh, by the way, like a guy who, think about this, like everything I said about him being from California, from the West Coast, he's been in the Bay Area his entire life. He uproots all of that to move to the other side of the continent to play for a team that is like, I don't know, we might play in Dunedin. We might play in Toronto. We might play in Buffalo. I don't know. We literally can't tell you where you're going to live. And Marcus Semien comes to the other side of the continent, brings his family, three kids under the age of five, one of whom was a newborn, born like weeks before he joined the Toronto Blue Jays. He is dealing with all of that off the field throughout this season while playing 162, while having the productive season that he had, as all Blue Jays players were, right? With the three home scenario, like there was a ton of off the field crap that players had to go through. But Marcus Semien had a young family, three young boys, him and his wife, Tara. And oh, by the way, on the MLBPA's executive subcommittee in a CBA year, you think that was like a light workload this year of all years? You know, every opposition club that came in, somebody I'm sure had questions for him. I'm sure there were all kinds of Zooms that he had to be on throughout all that. With all this stuff swirling and all these things going on, he has the season he had on the field and off where Bo Bichette is like tearing up in his post-game Zoom after the final game of the season, talking about like what an influence Marcus Semien was on him. That character arc to me is like the most impressive one. And I can't wait, you know, until Marcus Semien finally like gets paid this offseason and gets what he really should have gotten earlier in his career.
Yeah, it was a great, great season and had a huge impact on the Blue Jays' chances of winning every single day because he was out there every single time they played. You know, clearly, as you mentioned with Bichette's response, I mean, and we should mention too, I mean, the Jays, as we were talking to them on Sunday after the season ended, there was a lot of kind of emotional responses there from Charlie Montoyo, from George Springer, Bo Bichette. You could tell that these guys were, you know, pretty upset to have the season end in the way that it did. And yeah, Bichette's answer was telling. Like he could barely get out like four or five words. And that in itself said more than anything, really. So yeah, you know, Semien had such a good year and it was a great rebound for him, right? Like it was a great, with both him and with Vladdy. You know, I guess probably the reason we chose those two is they started from a place of uncertainty. And, you know, for, I'm sure internally they had confidence that they could do this, but they hadn't rebounded yet in the way that they wanted to and in the way that they eventually would. So, you know, it ends up being really compelling, you know, as opposed to maybe someone like a Bo Bichette. Everyone, you know, going into the season, everyone expects him to be good. He has been good. He is good. Great. I mean, there's probably less of a narrative you know, shift that's occurring there. Although Bo Bichette too deserves credit for having what was a tremendous season and one that really further entrenches him as an incredible core piece for this team. There's so many stories like that.
It's funny, man. How much did we know about Bo Bichette coming into the season, even though, right? Last year, he played 29 games in 2020. The year before that, rookie season, he played 46. So is that 75 games off the top of my head he played? I mean, we're talking 330 big league plate appearances. And then for him to go out and affirm that, like we kind of assumed we knew things about Bo Bichette coming into the season. I don't know why, but we kind of assumed that we did. But then he went out and affirmed like, no, I am this guy. Like my swing works, my approach works. Like I can be that like 120, 125 OPS plus guy at the big leagues. Like that was an underrated thing that happened this year.
Absolutely. And so you combine that with Vladdy showing that he's an MVP caliber talent and should be for the next decade. I think without exaggeration, that I think that's a fair statement for Vladdy for the next 10 years. And Teoscar Hernandez, same thing. You know, going into this year, yeah, you want a silver slugger, but, you know, he had done it in a shortened season. It's different to do it over 162. And the year he had was incredible. He's one of the best hitters in the American League. That's huge. So now, as the Blue Jays move ahead, they know they have the core of a great offensive team. Not just a good offensive team that can hold their own, a great offensive team. They also have Berríos, Ryu, Manoa. You know, we'll see what happens with Pearson. They have the makings of a very good rotation as well. As it stands now, it's not a very good rotation because they're losing Mats and Ray, but they have the makings of what could be a very good rotation. So they need to augment. They need to be adding to this team in significant ways this offseason, but they're doing it from a great place because they have the high-end talent that the best teams in baseball need. They need to surround it, but they have that high-end talent, and really it's up there with any team in baseball.
Yeah, no, if you were an executive and you were looking for like a starting place, right? Like give me that like blueprint, like give me what they have and I can build from there. Blue Jays are pretty good spot and going forward.
Yeah.
Even think about like the money committed. They got like 65 mil on the books next year. You know, you got some money to work with. And like, look, you're going to have some really, like this is why these decisions are going to be really meaningful this winter and going forward, is that you like, you've got some big arbitration cases coming up. You think like Jose Berríos, Teoscar Hernández, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. enters arbitration this winter. You're thinking about extensions for all three of those guys. I don't know how realistic, you know, any of them are going to be, but you're absolutely thinking about that. You think about committing money long-term to those guys. You've stated repeatedly, we're going to be aggressive and we're going to be active. Like Hyunjin Ryu, George Springer, that's not the end of it. Like we're going to go out and we're going to be players in the free agent market. Well, you got a hell of a class coming up here. You want a, you know, primetime shortstop. You want a Corey Seager or a Carlos Correa, they're out there. You want a frontline starter, you want a Max Scherzer, you want a Kevin Gausman, like those guys are out there. So you've got some very big and meaningful decisions to make and a pretty like intricate balancing act between sort of, you know, how much money you commit to payroll going forward, how much you need to keep in reserves, because eventually some of these young players, it's already happening, who have been giving you surplus value and have been like playing out of their minds on very like low cost deals are going to start getting costly and are going to start getting expensive. It's going to be super interesting to see how the Blue Jays navigate those waters.
Yeah. Vlad Jr., just to pick one example, is going to go from literally being as affordable as any major league baseball player can be. So he's, you know, on the same level as a Taylor Saucedo. That's the kind of level that Vlad Jr.'s been at to this point in his career. Now he's going to jump to about 10, 11 million, you know, something like that in all likelihood. And yeah, it's only going to go up from there for a while. And, you know, you talk about extensions. Berríos, yeah, that would be a great player to extend if they can. Probably talking, you know, over 100 million to do that. If you're talking about Teoscar Hernández, I agree. There's a case for a nice four-year deal there for the Jays. But Vladdy really is the one that to me is the most important, because he's 4 years away from free agency. And I've said this before, but man, you cannot let Vlad Jr. sign with the Red Sox in 4 years. Ooh. You cannot let Vlad Jr. be wearing pinstripes in four years. Like he might look good in pinstripes. You can't let it happen. And if you're the Blue Jays, look, they're a big market team. They're now acting like a big market team. Mark Shapiro talks about them being a behemoth. And if you are a behemoth, you do not let Vlad Guerrero Jr. wear pinstripes in 2025 or 2026.
How do you like Dodger Blue, buddy? How about that? He's in the other league. You don't have to see him as much. Yeah, man, that's going to be such a huge, huge decision. Consider like just thinking about, you think about the durability that he showed this year, right? And the Blue Jays know more about just what his health was actually like throughout the year, how much, you know, he had to be managed. But I think that him playing a full season this year was big. I think this winter is going to be really big for him as well, like just replicating what he did last winter.
Absolutely.
The organization again, like the commitment and the dedication.
Before you start talking seriously about extensions, you need to see him in spring training in great shape once again, mentally, physically ready for the season. So I'm not saying you do that in November. You, first of all, you have to deal with the Ray and the Semien and the free agency part of it, and there's a CBA looming. But I mean, if you get to spring training and all that stuff is sorted out, that's when you have the conversation with Vladdy.
Yeah, and that is one of like six or seven reasons why I don't think there's any, you know, realistic chance of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. inking an extension this winter. Like there's that. There's a new CBA that's going to have to be sorted out. So really nothing's happening, honestly, with on this scale of this magnitude. We're talking about like extension for Vlad or Berríos, or you're talking about free agent signings of like a Seager or Correa. Nothing is happening on that scale until you know what the CBA is going to be going forward. There's that. look, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s dad did pretty well for himself. I don't think that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is having any trouble putting food on the table. So I think that, like, he's not as motivated as maybe other players would be to take, you know, to sign an extension right now. Like, he can bet on himself. He can go year to year. And, like, geez, if he hits free agency as this player at 26, would it be? Turning 27?
Yeah. Well, he's 22 now, 4 years away. So, yeah.
Holy smokes, the earning potential there.
I know.
You don't, like, if he really believes that he can be this guy each of the next 4 years and hit free agency off of a year like this, like, to sign an extension now would be to leave so much potential money on the table.
I agree. At the same time, Fernando Tatis Jr., same thing, right? Son of a major leaguer, incredible potential, young age. And that's the comp, right? It's the Tatis deal that I think was $340 million, $350 in there. So that's the comp for Vladdy. And Tatis did it. You know, some guys don't. Soto decided not to, evidently. He's going to hit free agency. Acuna signed.
Soto's another one. Holy smokes. Yeah. If he can beat this guy.
Incredible. Which, yeah, I think Soto can. We've seen it year after year with Soto, even to an extent that we haven't with Vladdy. So, jeez. But I think there's a chance that Vladdy would, and I don't know. I haven't asked him about it. I don't know what his stance is, but I think there's a chance. If I'm looking at this as a fan, as an observer, as the Toronto Blue Jays, I certainly wouldn't assume that there's no shot of extending Vladdy.
There is just, yeah, there is a class of, like, young players in this game who are changing it in, like, a lot of ways. It's changing it on the field and off the field.
And for some reason, none of them are in the playoffs. Tatis, Otani, Soto, yeah. Vladdy. It's really unfortunate, actually, for Major League Baseball, because those guys are so good. So good.
No, it sucks for the game, right? Like,
yeah.
It sucks that, yeah, you're not getting the marketability. Like, baseball players are never more visible than during the postseason, because there's never more eyes on baseball than during the postseason. So to be having, like, if Vlad was having big moments, right? Like, in a wild card game, if, like, Acuna could have been there, that's a good example. Like, if Acuna was there, right? Like, that's, you know, the Nationals weren't doing anything, but, like, Acuna very much could be in these playoffs. Tatis very much could be in these playoffs. Yeah, man. No, some of these young players are changing, like, just the, you know, the way the game's played. They're changing salaries. Like, they're setting precedents, and it's just, you know, that's too forward thinking right now. I just got too far down the road. Let's just think about the next few months and what the Blue Jays need to do. Multiple starting pitchers, obviously bullpen reinforcements very much needed. Got to figure out something up the middle. If Semien's not coming back, like, what are you going to do with second base? How are you going to address that? Third base has been a hole since Josh Donaldson left that the Blue Jays have been unable to fill. What are you going to do there? Like, for as good as the core is, this is almost a good thing and a bad thing. Like, the bad part is that, like, there's some very, like, glaring needs on the team. But the good part is, you know exactly what those needs are. You know,
yes,
that, like, a big left-handed bat would really change things for this lineup. So it's very clear what you need to do. Now it's just about kind of surmising how you're going to go about it.
Exactly. And so I think it's worth identifying, as you said, what these needs are. And clearly, okay, so you got Robbie Ray and Steven Matz both hitting free agency. There goes 2/5 of your rotation, including the number one. So to me, the internal options, Stripling, Thomas Hatch, Nate Pearson, not enough. So you need to go out and augment with multiple starting pitchers. That's a need. And Robbie Ray, of course, will be in that conversation. Fully expect the Jays will engage with him and continue to have discussions with him. So that's the rotation. Two arms. Bullpen, multiple arms. Do you sign minor league deals? Do you go out and sign someone like a Colin McHugh, who's able to give you a bit more quote-unquote certainty, a bit more experience? I think that's on the table for sure. Or do you trade for some optionable relievers who can go up and down? I mean, there's tons of value in those guys as well. Every good bullpen needs and has those guys. So, you know, that's on the table. And as you said, they're going to need at least one infielder, at least one bat. And, you know, is that a third baseman and you roll with some combination of Espinal and Biggio at second? Or is that Semien and you try to figure out third? Or is it both? All those things are on the table. That's before we even get to trades. I mean, it's going to be a busy offseason. This team, when they arrive opening day 2022, it's going to look very different.
Yeah, no, every team is, right? I think, like, thinking about just the position player core, like, specifically, right? Like, you mentioned Espinal, Biggio. Those guys are really well-suited to bench roles. Those guys are really well-suited to playing 2-3 times a week, in my opinion. And I think that, like, a best-case scenario is you have a Marcus Semien at second base and, like, an Eduardo Escobar at third, and you're good. Like, you have everyday players there, and then you have Espinal and Biggio who can kind of spell in here and there, get guys off their feet. If you have an injury, which you will have injuries, you feel okay about them as depth, you know, rather than, you know, go into like the tier of depth that you don't feel great about, like the Breivik Valera tier, like the Gerard Dyson tier. Like, speaking of the outfield, I wonder if push comes to shove with the outfield here this offseason. Like, do you have to move on from Randall Grichuk, who, like, super hot start to the season, man? Like, it's kind of ironic, right? For as poor as the Blue Jays outfield play was in April, and for as much as that contributed to those 9-2 run losses, Randall Grichuk, like, was the only thing between that not being a complete unmitigated disaster in April, because he gave the Blue Jays a hot streak in April and through some of May as well. The problem was that ended and it didn't come back. And he got to a point towards the end of the year where it was like, is this guy playable right now? Like, you saw the plate appearances and the playing time go down and down and down to the point where on Sunday, final game of the season, Randall Grichuk was pinch hit for prior to his second plate appearance of the game. Think about that. Like, think about what that said about how the Blue Jays felt about Randall Grichuk at that point, what kind of confidence they had in his bat in that spot. So what are you going to do with this outfield? Teoscar Hernandez, George Springer, obviously locks for this team next year. But when it comes to Gurriel, when it comes to Grichuk, when it comes to whatever your depth is going to be beyond that, I do think there are some questions, and I do think there is room to do something differently for 22 and beyond.
Won't be surprised if Grichuk is traded this offseason. We'll see. Some trades are coming for sure. There always are deals, without a doubt. And look, like, when we're talking about the free agents, right? Because everyone wonders about Ray and Semien. So to me, the Jays are in on both. It's actually impossible for me to imagine the world where the Jays do not continue these conversations, right?
Of course.
Yeah. They had this incredible season with these guys and helped them, and it worked out both ways. Those guys helped the Jays. So those conversations will continue. There's little doubt about that. Where they lead, who knows? Because, you know, do the Dodgers come after Semien? Do the Giants, again, kind of a hometown Bay Area team, come after Semien? Do the Yankees look at him? There are a lot of teams that would benefit from having Marcus Semien on them. And so he is going to have a lot of choice. I think the Blue Jays will be part of that discussion. Now, you know, an interesting question that I've kind of wondered about, and I'm not sure that there's an easy answer to it, Arden, but, you know, do you think there's a world where the Jays bring back both? Or do you think it is, you know, max of one among those two?
I don't think it's realistic. And like you said, open market environment, man. Like, you're going to have the Giants coming after Semien, I promise you. Like, somebody is going to come after Robbie Ray. Like, every team is looking for starting pitching. Like, you know, not every team is going to want what Marcus Semien brings, but I think there's some really competitive clubs that are going to want what Marcus Semien brings. So whereas with Ray, you're competing with a very wide scale. With Semien, it may be a bit more of a concentrated group, but they're going to be aggressive bidders. And yeah, I think the Giants and Semien makes a whole bunch of sense for a lot of reasons. So no, I don't think it's realistic that both Semien and Ray return to the Blue Jays. Do you?
No, I honestly wouldn't even be surprised if they both end up leaving. Here's the thing. I'm not trying to say that would be good. The Jays are obviously better when you add a 45 home run second baseman and a Cy Young winner to them. Okay, so let's be clear. They are better with these guys. But the reality is they're now free agents. So the Jays are going to have conversations with them. They are also, in my opinion, I'm not reporting this because obviously it would be tampering for the Jays to even leak a hint of this at this point. But I expect the Blue Jays to have conversations with Carlos Correa and with Corey Seager, right? Like, they've shown that they operate in that tier. Those guys are really good. I think the Jays should go hard after Carlos Correa and pursue him and try to sign him. And they've obviously got intel on him from Dave Hudgens and from George Springer. So they know, and I assure you that those are conversations they have to have internally to figure out if this is a guy they want to go after. And I think the answer is probably yes, Carlos Correa is great. We should go after him. So I think there are a lot of different possibilities here. And if we learned anything from last offseason, it's that sometimes having a little patience as we're watching all of this unfold is probably a good thing. So as we record this on October the 5th, we don't have all the answers, and this will play out over the course of months and months. But the Jays, yeah, they're going to look different when they show up to spring training. They are going to have some good players, and they're going to be a good team. But seeing what form that takes is super, super interesting, as always.
You asked me like whether I think there's a chance that Ray and Semien could both come back to the Blue Jays. And I was like, no, I don't think it's realistic. If you ask me if there's a chance that people are going to be patient with the pace of the offseason, that's an absolute no.
Yeah, it's a hard no.
That is a hard no right there. Absolutely not. But yeah, it is important to remember, like, the Blue Jays are going to have conversations with everyone, right? You mentioned they're going to have conversations with Korea. They're going to check in on Trevor Story, on Javi Baez, on Noah Syndergaard, on everybody on the market, because that's what they do. They get a sense of what expectations are, where their opportunities lie, who would be open to coming to Toronto, who's looking for what type of deals. And they just get a sense of the landscape, and they figure out what's our optimal path forward. Look at this past offseason, right? Like, in on DJ LeMahieu, in on Gausman, in on Michael Brantley, in on Ha-Seong Kim, like in on all of these players. Hendricks, right? Hendricks at their facility in Dunedin. I mean, in on all of these guys making offers in many cases, like competitive offers, and many in on Francisco freaking Lindor, dude, like making so many sliding doors of this past offseason where things could have gone differently, right? For the Blue Jays to end up with Marcus Semien at the end, which is a tremendous outcome. A lot of things had to not work for them first, for them to get to Marcus Semien. So it's like important to remember going forward, like the Blue Jays, just it's the way they operate. They look at the landscape, they see what's out there, where their opportunities lie, and then they just kind of like chart their path and try to find the best way through it and how to build like the best team for the following season. That's how they, you know, trade's a little bit different. And I agree with you, like, trades, I think, are going to happen this winter. And I think trades kind of need to happen, because I think for the Blue Jays to kind of make all these puzzle pieces fit with everything that we've been talking about with payroll and with like the upcoming costs that are, you know, about to be due in subsequent years, I think trades have to happen. And I think they have to get creative in that way. So that's going to happen. But when it comes to free agency, there's a lot of ways things could break. And the Blue Jays aren't a team that goes out and says, we have to have Carlos Correa. That's the only guy we can get.
No.
They are fine with a bunch of different outcomes in free agency.
That's right. You can't get overly attached to one. But it's funny, you know, we talk about players and how they sometimes have career years. But, you know, if you think about this offseason, and I know it's a collective effort, right? But of course, we affix these moves to one person a lot of the time. And so if Ross Atkins is that person for the Blue Jays, you might say that he had a career year, right? To sign George Springer, Robbie Ray, the Cy Young winner, Marcus Semien, who goes out and sets an all-time record for second baseman. Like, when it comes to free agent signings, it's hard to ever do better than that. Now, they'll try again this offseason. They'll try again the offseason after that. But, you know, and even throwing in a couple trades that worked out too, like the Mats deal. But in hindsight, like actually, as we look back at last offseason, that was a great offseason for the Jays.
Yeah, Kirby Yates, the one thing that you wish you could take back, right? That's the one thing that really did not work out.
I mean,
at all. But it was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty low cost paid there. I don't think that the Kirby Yates, the whatever it ended up being, 5.25, 5.5, I don't think that stopped you from doing anything else. You could throw in season trades too, man. Simber deal, as you mentioned, Simber and Dickerson for Joe Panic and Andrew McInvale. Great maneuver. Would have been better if it came a bit earlier, but great maneuver. Trevor Richards deal for Rowdy Tellez. Like, that worked out for both sides, really. But I mean, it just wasn't going to happen for Tellez here. And I think the Barrios trade, like, very, very strong move. Really helped this team. Really necessary. So yeah, it's been a great year for this Blue Jays front office. They're going to have to replicate it.
Yep, that's right. More work ahead now.
No doubt. More work ahead for us, for sure. We're going to step away. Plenty more to talk about as the offseason rolls on. As ATL rolls on, I want to thank all of you for listening all year. Really do appreciate it. You can always reach out to us at theletters@sportsnet.ca. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, and we thank them very much for their work, their tireless work behind the scenes all year, and bringing this podcast to you on audio and visual mediums. We thank them very, very much. And we thank you for listening. For Ben, for Art, Harden. This is At The Letters.